quarter is quickly coming to an end. We've spent two quarters on an overview of the Old Testament, a lot longer than what was originally purposed, but that's okay. I've enjoyed the study, and several of you have let me know that you've enjoyed it, and it's been profitable. And so we will, Lord willing, conclude this quarter with the Old Testament, and then one of the quarters next year we'll pick up and do the New Testament. So you've already got that material prepared for you in your book, and you can go and study that and add any notes that you'd like to take. Before I forget, when we study the book of Lamentations, and I mentioned to you that I would give you a chart that has the fulfillment of the curses that were listed in Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter. And I talked to you about those being fulfilled and that you can find those in the book of Lamentations. Did I give you that chart? Because I can't remember if I did or not. All right, here it is. We'll start up here and pass it around. You can take one of those. It's just got the references for the book of Deuteronomy chapter 28 and then those curses fulfilled in the book of Lamentations. You tuck that away in your material and you'll have that to go back on and make any notes. We don't have time to cover that in our class. We have one more book to conclude a study of the major prophets. Who are the major prophets of the Old Testament?
Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel. Okay.
Good. So five books, four penmen, right? And our last one this morning that we're going to talk about is the book of Daniel. Perhaps out of the at least the four major prophets, Daniel is probably the most well known. We probably are more familiar with the events of the book of Daniel than we are probably any other events in Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. Daniel is less difficult to understand. There are some difficult sections of the book of Daniel, at least from my perspective. For me, it may not be difficult for you. But I find there are some difficult things to think about and to study about in the book of Daniel. But most are familiar, at least with the events of the book of Daniel. Appreciate that, Ray. And a lot of these things we read and we study and we need to make application of. In fact, we say time and time again, Romans 15, verse 4, what does Paul say? Things written for our learning, right? So we learn from all the things that are penned in the Old Testament over and over. Jesus and the apostles pointed individuals back to the events of the Old Testament. So they're put there for our benefit, that we might know the things that God would have us to know. And so we come to the book of Daniel. I've got an approximate date. I'm not big on dates, as I've told you, but there it is. And depending on what source you look at, you might find a different date. We know that it was during the time of the captivity because the book begins in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And that the Lord gave the king of Judah into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. That's Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. And then the visions and all the things that was revealed to Daniel and the word that he penned came during that time. And so, your key verse, Daniel chapter 2, verse 44, that you're familiar with. There are only six things that I tried to stick with throughout all this study on each book, and that was an approximate date, the writer, key events and characters, a key verse, and then a synopsis of each book, a little summary. What's your key verse for the book of Daniel? You may think of other key verses, but for our study, what did I put for you?
244.
Yeah. Now, most people are familiar. Most Christians are familiar with the statement that is made in Daniel chapter 2, verse 44, which says what?
Foretells of the coming of the kingdom.
Yeah. And the days of these kings. Now, that's a study that you need to take that's too in-depth for an overview of the Bible. When he talks about these kings, what kings? And talks about the God of heaven. We'll talk in the sermon a little bit about that for one of the points. That the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. He shall break in pieces these other kingdoms, and it shall stand how long?
Forever.
And so, you think about Daniel 2:44, I suggest and recommend you commit that to your memory. Here's some key characters of the book of Daniel. Of course, the principal character of the book is Daniel. Then you had Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, however you prefer to pronounce that, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Probably most people are familiar with Daniel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, right? And the events that took place surrounding them. Daniel was a Jew who had been taken captive during the reign of Jehoiakim. Daniel and his comrades were described as having what? Having no blemish, well-favored, skillful in wisdom, cunning in knowledge, understanding science, and able to stand in the king's palace, being capable of learning the ways of the Chaldeans. Chapter 1 and in verse 4. Right now in our study of the overview, we are at where your questions on the Old Testament are at, on the book of Daniel. The king desired that certain individuals from among the children of Israel be separated. And what was the purpose that he wanted them separated? The book opens up with this. What did he want some of the children separated? To be servants, that they could impart this knowledge to someone who was capable of learning these various things that he mentions in chapter 4. The king, in verse 5, I can't say chapter 4, but it's verse 4 of chapter 1. Then in verse 5, the king appointed a daily provision for them. But Daniel purposed something in his heart. And what was it that he purposed?
He would never partake of the king's
food. Okay. Now, want to partake of the king's nourishment, right? The king's meat nor his wine, lest he be defiled. He's a Jew, obedient to the law of Moses. I'm not going to be defiled with those things. Yeah? He purposed in his heart that he wouldn't do that. He was allowed to abstain from those things. And the countenance of him and his comrades was how many times better?
Much better,
right? That's one of your questions, by the way. I'm giving you the answer, but you pick that sheet up in the back. Those of you that are doing those questions, we're well over 2,000 questions by one of the Old Testament, so good job for you for dedicating your time to answer those questions. Daniel was faithful to Jehovah in refusing that daily provision. According to chapter 1 and in verse 21, he continued even to the first year of King Cyrus. Remember that it was during the first year of Cyrus that he made the decree for the Jews to return to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple that you read from Ezra 1, 1 through 4. He excelled, Daniel did, among his peers, the magicians, and the astrologers, and was able to do what they could not do. And God was with him. Daniel had the ability. Who gave him the ability to understand dreams and show the interpretation?
God did.
In Daniel 2, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream and he desired for it to be interpreted, but the wise men of the king were unable to do so. And when you look at that event, it's interesting. I was prepared for those questions. The king didn't just say, "Tell me what the interpretation is." But he also had another request of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans. What did he request?
What the dream was.
And what the dream was. Now, that's a lot more difficult than you tell me what the dream is and I'll tell you what the interpretation is. And he said, "I know that you would certainly gain the time," he says, to the wise men or the astrologers and so forth. But Daniel was able to do both and showed him what those events were. And so, in Daniel 2 is where you find Daniel chapter 2 and then verse 44. And there's a lot, as we've looked at so far, a lot of prophecies concerning the coming kingdom. I don't know if I've mentioned to you before, but a good way of remembering those things is if you just remember the year 2, or not the year 2, but the chapter 2, and you have Joel chapter 2, Isaiah chapter 2, Daniel chapter 2, and the fulfillment and Acts chapter 2. So if you remember those four books in chapter 2, then you can commit that to your memory and be able to teach others easily, readily about that. Daniel's humility is seen in chapter 2 and in verse 30. Notice that the Bible says, "But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living. But for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart." I put a note in the margin of my Bible that indicates Daniel's humility that he had, his attitude. "It wasn't made known or revealed unto me for any wisdom that I had more than anybody else. That's not the reason that I'm able to do that." And then beginning in verse 31, he talks about the image. And he tells the king his dream, shows the interpretation of it. And then he's rewarded in verse 48 of Daniel chapter 2. "Made Daniel a great man, gave him many great gifts, made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon." But Daniel didn't forget about others, because the next verse talks about his friends, his comrades, his associates, companions. He requested of the king, and he said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king." In chapter 3, and we're not going to be able to look at all the events of Daniel, but again, when you think about Daniel's attitude, Daniel's dedication to serving God. You get to chapter 3 and the king set up what in the plain of Dura? He set up this image, right? He gives the measurement of that image. It was tall, it was high. And the king gave a commandment that individuals were to follow. What was that commandment? What was that order?
Bow down to it.
Bow down to it. When you hear these various instruments of music, you bow down. And if you don't, what's the fate? The punishment.
Fiery furnace.
Now, you're talking about writing these things written for our learning. We make application of that. Had we been Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, later on, or Daniel, what would our fate, or what would our reaction would have been to that? What would our reaction be? Suppose that someone were to say, "You're not going to follow, you're not going to go serve God on the Lord's day. We're going to outlaw that." What would we do? What would be our reaction? It's something to think about. We see the dedication of Daniel. We see the dedication of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. Well, he sets this up in verse 8. "They came there and they accused the Jews and spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the corn, he goes through the instrument, shall fall down. But there are certain Jews whom you set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men refused to do that." Did they refuse to do that? Was that accusation a true accusation? They refused to do that. Why did they refuse to do that? Because it was wrong. Why was it wrong? The king was just saying, "Fall down and worship this image that I've set up." But why was it wrong for them to do that?
Because they were not to worship a man.
That's
right. "Thou shalt have no images."
Yeah. "Thou shalt have no other God before me," right? "Shall not bow down thyself unto them, not make unto thee any graven image," and so forth. In Exodus 20 with the Ten Commandments. Well, they weren't going to do that. And they're brought before the king. Now, here's what's interesting to me is their response to what the king said. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it's not indicated in the text, unless I overlooked it, and you can bring that to my attention if I did, that they didn't know what God's response was going to be. Before the events took place, they said, give an answer. Is it true that this happened? And he says, the king does. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? And then the three answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. Now notice it. They say, he's able to. They don't know that he's gone to. They simply say, he's able to do that. But what's this next statement? But, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, but verse 18, but if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now you think about that statement. God is able to, but if he doesn't, what do they say?
Still
not going to. You talk about dedication. You think about us today when we have opposition of various kinds. I don't know what God's reaction is. I don't know how God is going to deal necessarily with every situation that comes up. I know that He's able to. He's sitting on the throne, come what may. But if it doesn't turn out the way that you or me think that it ought to turn out, I'm still not going to cave to ungodliness. That ought to be our attitude. That is a lesson for us. And as a result of that, the king was angry. And what did he do?
Seven times hotter.
So hot that those that delivered them to the furnace fire, what did it do to them?
Killed
them too. But God delivered them from that. Wouldn't you have liked to have been there? If you think about some great Bible events that you'd like to have seen the expression on individuals' face, that perhaps would be one of them. But God delivered them from it. Then we get to another event that most are familiar with, and that is Daniel and the lion's den. Most people are familiar with the events that took place concerning that. Before that, in chapter 5, you had the handwriting on the wall, and we'll make reference to that as well in the sermon this morning. Keep your ears open to that. But then you come over to chapter 6, and there was another decree that was signed of the king. But this particular king, and what was the decree? These presidents, some of your versions won't use, doesn't use the word presidents. They might be counselors maybe. In Daniel chapter 6 and in verse 4. Well.
Anybody who petitioned or prays to another god or recognizes another god within so many days, 30 days,
uh-huh.
be found guilty.
Except for you, king. Right?
Right.
But the whole reason they did that was why?
To trap him.
Because they even said, notice what the text says. Verse 4. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could not find occasion or fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of God. And that's what prompted them to go to the king and say, put this into writing. Once put in writing, can be changed. But then we learn something about Daniel again. Not only do we learn early on about his humility, his steadfastness, you read about his dedication in this chapter. Because when you come down to verse 10, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, so it's not that he said, well, it's not that he did what the text is getting ready to say he did in absence of that knowledge, but Daniel knew that it was signed, and he still did what the Bible's getting ready to tell us that he did. And what did he do?
Three times a day.
Went to his chamber, his window being open, kneeled down toward Jerusalem, prayed three times a day, and the last part of that statement, four words, as he did aforetime. Tells us something about his lifestyle, doesn't it? As he did aforetime. These presidents, these counselors, these men who obviously had influence with the king knew about his manner and acknowledged that. Well, he was faithful to God, and then as a result of that, what happened? had you been Daniel? What would our reaction be? I don't know. As I've said in the past, I like to think that I know what my reaction would be. But God delivers him from that. We come to chapter 7. And we have this vision that is talked about, that is seen. Begin with verse 9. There's other things that are seen. You can go back and you can study, obviously, again, overview of the Bible. You don't have time to look at all of these, and we're basically going to spend entire class on the book of Daniel, but that's okay. In verse 9, he says, I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were open. I beheld them because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake. I beheld him until the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before it. And there was given unto him what? That all people should what?
Serve.
His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, in his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. When you think about this vision that Daniel sees, what does that remind you of relative to other references in the Bible? What can you glean? Remember that when we talked about studying the prophets, we talked about pay attention to the language, because a lot of this language in Isaiah, Ezekiel, Daniel is language that you're going to see elsewhere in the Bible, like the book of Revelation. So the first century, the Jews were familiar with that typology and that language that you find in the Old Testament. Let me ask you that. Who was given a kingdom? Who would come to the Ancient of Days and receive a kingdom?
Christ.
In Acts chapter 1, you have a picture of the Lord returning to heaven. Now, so far as the record goes of Acts chapter 1 and the apostles, from the standpoint of their perspective, the cloud just received him out of their sight. Right? And they went back to Jerusalem to tarry there as the Lord had commanded them. If we understand Daniel chapter 7 correctly, these are some events that took place of which the apostles did not see with their human eye. You think about this comparison with clouds, this picture of clouds. You see that elsewhere in the Bible. Mark chapter 16 talks about, so then after the Lord had spoken to them, he was received up into heaven, a cloud received him out of their sight. That's stated again in Acts chapter 1. Stated again in Revelation chapter 1. Behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye he come with power. But he'll, in that reference, come with clouds. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, they that are alive and remain shall be caught up with the Lord, and to meet the Lord in the air in the clouds, and so shall ever be with the Lord. The cloud part is not what I'm telling you is significant, but the manner in which the Lord ascended and the manner in which the Bible says that the Lord will come. I know that that's similar because those men from Galilee, or the two men that stood by the apostles in Acts chapter 1, said, you men of Galilee, while I stand here gazing up into heaven, what else they say? This same Jesus which is taken up from you into heaven, what's the rest of it? Shall so come again in like manner as you've seen go into heaven. We know that Jesus received a kingdom, right? All authority, power, being given unto him, Matthew 28. We know that he is reigning as King of kings and Lord of lords over the kingdom, which is the church, Matthew 16, 18 and 19. And then in 1 Corinthians 15, he talks about then cometh the end when what? Relative to the kingdom, what will happen? Be delivered up to the Father. One preacher has stated, and it's a good statement, rightfully so, that if you can know the difference between set up and deliver up, you'll never have a problem with the false teaching of premillennialism. Then cometh the end when he shall have delivered up, not set up, but delivered up, the kingdom to the Father. But anyway, you have that in chapter 7. You can study that and think about those things. Any thoughts up to this point? We've got about 5 minutes or so.
Doug, when you think of the effect on the people that saw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being delivered from the trials of Daniel, what effect that had upon those people, what effect did it have on those individuals such as Daniel, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? The promise was that they would return from captivity. I think through this, as God delivered them, those words became more sure that that was going to happen. I think Daniel understood the prophecy of the kingdom because he makes that statement in chapter 2, as far as that. He says in verse 45, the dream is certain, its interpretation is sure, that Daniel knew that. I think through the things that were delivered, through that, what was spoken, became more surety to him that that was going to take place.
Strengthening their faith, their confidence, not in self, but in God. God always, by the way, keeps His promises. Any other thoughts? Good. We have other visions that the book talks about. I suggest to you that they're not all easy. I will also suggest to you that when the Bible says that this is what is meant by the goat, or whatever the case is, that you take what the Bible says is the representation of that. Don't miss the trees for the forest, and don't miss the forest for the trees. You study those things. The Bible is its own best commentary. We're on the same page with that. Let the Bible define the terms and the statements when it does, and go with what it states. So Daniel concludes his book. Verse 13, but go thou thy way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the day. Some versions say age at the conclusion of Daniel chapter 12. And so with that, we come to the end of the major prophets. Any thoughts? Then this next section that we're going to come to is known as the minor prophets. That's this man's designation, based upon what? Based upon the length of the writing, right? The book. Not as no reflection regarding the value of the book or the validity of the book, the inspiration of the book. They wrote with just as much authority as what the other Bibles wrote about or wrote with. The first one is the book of... These are not, by the way, in chronological order. So you might want to go back and study them in light of that. 792 to 687 B.C. It was written during the reign of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, and Jeroboam. Go back to your chart that's at the beginning of your book. The prophets of the Old Testament. I tell you again, the kings that ruled during that time, the approximate date and the birthplace of the prophet, and who they were sent to. Relative to Hosea, who was he sent to? Yeah. In the book, he talks about that in within the book. He begins what is referred to again as minor prophets. We've talked about all of that. The following is a suggested outline of the book. Now, on the outlines of these books, you can take these for what they're worth to you. One of the best ways, I think, in studying a book of the Bible is to put together your own outline on that book. You can Google outlines of the books of the Bible. Some of your Bibles have outlines of each book, but when you study the Bible for yourself and you divide the books based upon those divisions that you find, to me it has a tendency to stick more. But you read about Israel's unfaithfulness in the first three chapters. Then number two, Israel's sin and punishment in chapters 4 through 10. And then the third section, chapters 11 through 14, is Israel's hope. Someone has stated that God balances His judgment with His mercy. Balances His judgment with His mercy. I'm willing to be merciful. Extend to you loving kindness on the condition that you be faithful. And if not, here's the result. Hosea did his prophetic work to the northern kingdom of Israel. The book tells us as that he received his message during the days of the kings that we talked about. And I've got those listed for you again. That's found in chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. The reign of the four mentioned kings of Judah spans from 792 to 687. And Jeroboam the second reigned from 793 to 753. What was Hosea's task? Similar to that of all the other prophets. Say it again.
It was to cry against Israel.
Yeah, to cry against Israel. Here's your condition. Here's the warning. Here's what you need to do. There's calamity. There's judgment that's going to come upon you if you don't do that. Chapter 1, Hosea was instructed by God to take a wife of... What was that representative of? What was the purpose behind that?
To show Israel how they had...
Yeah. God married Israel. Made a covenant with you. I've taken you unto myself as my people. But you've went and you've played the harlot. You've committed adultery. You've backslidden. By the way, Hosea is a good book that knocks the props out from under the once saved, always saved notion. Because Israel sure backslid against God. I want to finish this paragraph real quick and we'll close. He married Gomer, who bore him three children. She was not faithful in the marriage relationship. And again, that was used to show Israel's unfaithfulness to God. God was going to cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. Chapter 1, verse 4. Israel's whoredom had caused them to err and had taken away their heart from serving Jehovah. They're referred to as Ephraim. One has suggested that they were referred to as Ephraim because it was the largest. As described in 7, verse 8, notice this picture. A cake, not turn. Referred to as an empty vine, in chapter 10, verse 1. And as a result of that, they were told, prepare to what? Well, we'll look at it. That's another. But Hosea chapter 4, verse 6, as we look at it, they're destroyed for a lack of knowledge. And as a result of that, God is going to come upon them with destruction. Have stopped there. We're past time. I appreciate your good attention.